What's up, y'all? Welcome to another episode of We Talking About Games. This is episode 3, and I am your host, Mondo, aka Chunklet the Mongoo, and I am so happy to be back. I feel like I've been on quite the hiatus. If you've noticed, if you watched the last episode, if you watched the video episodes, if you're listening on audio, you may not notice, but I am in a new room. I moved last month, and moving has been way crazier than I thought it was going to be. Between moving, the holidays, hosting friends, and just getting life in order, being a father still and all that jazz, I just could not find the time to record this next episode. And also, I will admit, if I just get a little vulnerable early in the episode, I need to stop trying to be a perfectionist and just be cool with getting the product out. I had drowning myself in ideas I have for the podcast and telling myself like, I don't think I should do it until, and excuse my language, but fuck that. We just need to do it. And until we actually get it done, and then it'll just look different and feel different and so on and so forth. But we just got to get the wheels rolling because the weeks was passing by. Shout out to the homie Jordan, who aka Cognitive Clips, who will likely be the next guest on the show, who hit me up and was like, yo, bro, I just want to make sure that we still get this episode in. And I was like, man, I appreciate him just hitting me up and understanding that my life is kind of crazy right now and that he still wants to do the episode. So shout out to him. But yeah, I just want to get that out of the way. Shout out to the new space. Shout out to the studio. Shout out to my bookshelf being back and my games being there. But as you can see right here, there's still some boxes. There's still some crazy things going on over there. You don't want to know what's on this side of the bedroom. You do not want to know. It's kind of crazy. And so I got to get those ducks in order. And then you're going to start seeing things change a little bit in the background of the show. And I'm actually really, really excited for that. But yeah, recently moved. That's a big update for the show. And be on the lookout for episode 4 too, which I'm recording shortly after this one. So you're almost going to get like 2 back-to-back episodes just to make up for that little bit of hiatus that I took in between the episode with Alyssa and this episode now. So yeah, that's all early updates I want to get out of the way for the show, but let's just get right into it and talk about what I'm playing. I'm playing a few things. Just a sneak peek about episode 4. Episode 4 is going to be what I'm calling my backlog chronicles. My backlog is currently 100 plus games long, wide, whatever you want to describe it as. And I need to start chipping away at that. I got some great games on that backlog, and I really need to start chipping away at it. So episode 4 is going to be my backlog chronicle episode. And so look out for that. And so the games that I have been playing recently are my backlog games. I went back to playing Xenoblade Chronicles, chipping away at that. I'm like 20 hours into that one. I'm having a good time with that game. That game is beautiful. But I don't want to talk about it too much because I want to talk about these in the next episode. I'm playing KOTOR, which is the acronym for Knights of the Old Republic, an old Star Wars game. This is what, like early 2000s? But another great game that I've heard has one of the best Star Wars stories of all Star Wars, of all mediums, movies, books, TV shows, video games. Like, this is up there as one of the best. So I'm currently playing that. I'm currently chipping away at the Cyberpunk Phantom Liberty DLC because I really want to get through that and finish that. Started a second playthrough of Cyberpunk just to get through that and played like a couple of hours of it, and the set pieces. Oh, wow. They're not playing games over there at CD Projekt Red, that's for sure. And last but not least, I've been playing a little bit of Ghost of Tsushima. Ghost of Yote. I've been playing a little bit of Ghost of Yote here and there. It actually took me about a month to put my PS5 up and connect it after I moved. And I was itching to play some Ghost of Yote after I put my PS5 up. Let me tell you about it. So I've been chipping away at that one, and boy, am I having a good time. Ghost of Tsushima. Oh, boy. I don't know why I wrote that. Maybe it's because I missed the game. Sorry, audio listeners. My wife served me wine, and if you look at my glass, it says off the market. You know? And it's some good wine, and we're going to drink it throughout the rest of the episode. So those are the games I'm playing. I don't want to get too deep into talking about any of them because, again, the next episode is my Backlog Chronicles, and I get into details about these games as it relates to my backlog in the next episode. And I kind of want to save that conversation and those talking points for that. So look, again, be on the lookout for that. But you know what? That's actually a great segue into just podcast updates in general. One, go subscribe to YouTube and follow me on social media, mainly Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. I really got to get on Blue Sky because there's just so many gamers on Blue Sky. I feel like when Elon Musk took over Twitter, the one group of people who said, yeah, we're out of here, and they actually committed to it, were gamers. And it's not to say that there are no gamers on Twitter anymore, because there's a lot of gamers on Twitter. I think even some of the people who moved to Blue Sky are still also active on Twitter. But there are so many people who left Twitter for Blue Sky in gaming, and they are not coming back. Somebody who comes to mind pretty prominently is Matt Piscatella, who works at Circana Analytics, who pretty much does the main analytics for gaming every month around sales. He is on Blue Sky, and he is only on Blue Sky. That man is not on Twitter anymore. And so I feel like Blue Sky is a platform I just need to start engaging with a little more as it relates to the We Talking About Games account because of that. I need to get that thought out about Twitter because, like, gamers don't play. You know, the gamers were like, I remember, what was it? The Bitcoin fucking, oh my God, it's escaping me right now. The digital assets like cards and videos that people were selling. What are those things called? Oh, it's escaping me right now. I'm not going to focus too much on it. But I remember gamers were like, excuse me? We don't want that in our games. And they were not playing. And they did not put, I remember some companies tried it and they were like, but I don't want that. So I don't know what it is about gamers and activism, but they don't stand for nothing. They stand 10 toes down on what they believe in. And I'm not going to hold you. I got to respect that. And so it leads me to my next point, which is like, look out for the next episode. Hope you see it. But I really do think a lot of you are going to see it. The last episode I recorded was on December 1st. That was the day I put up the episode with Alyssa, if I'm not mistaken. And yeah, it was December 1st. It has been a month and a half. And I go into like the I go onto my podcast page, and on the homepage it just shows you like total listens. And over the past month, I like open my browser and that page will just automatically refresh. And when I click on that tab, there's like more listens. And I was like, oh, okay, that's cool. Like people are going and listening to it. Over the past 30 days, the podcast has 44 listens. I mean, not a lot. People got way more listens than that, right? That's cool. But that is a 193% increase from the preceding 30 days. So 200% more listens than I did in the 30 days prior. And that is from Christmas Day to today, which is the 25th to the 23rd. I'm assuming it's using like GMT time because it's still the 22nd here. But nonetheless, 44 listens in the past 30 days. And I haven't recorded an episode for like 45 days. And I just want to say, I really, really appreciate it. I don't know how y'all are finding the podcast. I don't know why y'all are even gravitating to it and listening to it. I was talking to Trav about it. And the only conclusion I can come to is that I've just been more active in making short form content on the We Talking About Games page and on my personal page. And maybe that is just naturally driving traffic to the podcast, like bringing attention to my page. Maybe people are clicking on the link tree, going to the podcast and listening to it. Because I'm gonna keep it a buck with you. The most listened to episode is the last episode I made from season one, which was a year and a half ago. That has as many listens in the last 30 days as the most recent episode with Alyssa, which was 45 days ago. And I just gotta say, I really, really appreciate it. Because for me, that tells me that, like, cool, y'all are enjoying the episodes that are new and the episode I made with Alyssa. but also you're willing to go back and listen to the last episode I made a year and a half ago, that pretty much at this point, the information in that episode is irrelevant. You know, it's not relevant anymore. And I mean, imagine if you're going back and listening to it, you're going back and listening to it because you want to hear me talk about it. I'm just still trying to wrap that around my head. I'm trying not to sit too much in the imposter syndrome. I'm really, really not. But I want to say that I really, really appreciate it. And hopefully we just grow some more from here. I got two episodes coming to y'all back to back. So let's see what the listens look like over the next 30 days. I'm really excited for that. And yeah, I think that's it for updates about the podcast, about what I'm playing. And yeah, just happy to be back in the motions, happy to be in a new space, happy to have the desk set up and everything. And we can just get back to regular scheduled programming, man. It's been a while. So today's episode is going to be about one thing and one thing only. And that's today's Xbox Developer Direct. Today being January 22nd, if you're listening to this at a later date. If you did not know, Xbox had a Developer Direct. If you don't know anything about Developer Directs in general, just a high-level overview of this event, for the past 3 years, Xbox has had a showcase of upcoming games in late January, where you get these really deep dives into upcoming games that they have coming down in that year to come, right? So this year, 2026, last year, 25, 24, so on. And unlike, say, like a State of Play or a Nintendo Direct or even like an Xbox Showcase, which happens in like June, where it's just straight trailers, maybe here and there you'll get a developer talking for a little bit before they show you the trailer, but it's pretty much trailer-based. And these shows are not trailer-based, and it's more of a showcase from the developers themselves, like giving developers truly 15 to 20 minutes to talk about their games. And it's not just the director of the game like it is in a showcase or a direct or a State of Play. It is the environmental designer. It is the quest designer. They're picking and choosing developers from all over the studio to break down the many aspects of these games. And I gotta say, in years past, I've enjoyed all of them just because it's great to learn about games from that perspective and see the people who are developing the games and have a passion for the work actually talk about the things that they're making. It's almost like, you know, you can hear a CEO talk about the product, but then you could also hear the person who's making the product talk about the product. And I think we could all agree who's probably going to give a more passionate, detailed, and thoughtful explanation of that product. And it's the person who's actually making it. And so I've actually grown to really enjoy these developer directs. I look forward to them at the beginning of the year, especially in a time of the year where the industry is slow and there's just not a lot going on. Games don't really get released in January. And we're coming off the holidays. January is just a slow month, regardless of what industry you work in. And it's cool to have something like this to not just look forward to, but to also act as like a jumpstart, as a trampoline into the rest of the year. And so my sentiments overall about this show, before we even get into it, I thought it was great. They showcased four games: Fable, Forza Horizon 6, a Game Freak game. Game Freak, the people who make Pokemon, which is called Beast of Reincarnation, looked beautiful. And then a mystery game. I called it a mystery game because they always have a mystery game. They always have they always got that one more thing, which is always a little surprise game, which is a game from Double Fine called Kiln. K-I-L-N. I thought they were saying Kill. And I was like, did they name their game Kill? God damn. But it's Kiln. It ends with an N. Interesting. We'll get into it. But those were the four games that they showcased. And obviously, if you don't already know, the big hitters were Forza Horizon 6, because that's probably Xbox's biggest franchise right now, which I got to say is kind of a shame that their biggest franchise is a racing game. I'm actually going to take that back a little bit, because if you look at the numbers and you look at sales, PlayStation's biggest franchise is like Grand Theft is not Grand Theft Auto, Gran Turismo. I was actually shocked. I was having a conversation with somebody one day about Gran Turismo, and I looked up the sales as a point of reference for the conversation. And Gran Turismo has sold a lot. Like, not in the totality as a franchise. Like, the last Gran Turismo sold a lot. And I think it's their highest selling first party game of this generation, if I'm not mistaken. So I guess that sentiment is also true on the PlayStation side as it is on the Xbox side, where that is Xbox's number one game. But I think when we say that about Xbox, it doesn't mean it the same way as PlayStation, because PlayStation is putting out quality games in other genres from other studios, where Xbox is not necessarily doing that. But is this the beginning of change? I don't want to be the one to say that, to be honest with you. I feel like everybody has been saying that ever since the Xbox has come out. Is this Xbox's year? Is this Xbox's year? I don't want to go into it with that mindset of, is this Xbox's year? Because I actually think Xbox had a great year last year, unless you're looking at it from like the hardware perspective, where they're not selling a lot of consoles. You can say they're not selling any consoles for the amount that they're selling compared to their competitors in Nintendo and PlayStation. So yeah, so I want to leave that there. I don't want to get deeper into that thought. I think they had a great year last year, and I think they're set up to have a really good year this year. Again, I'm kind of past the whole like, oh, is Xbox going to have a good year? They've been putting out games. And I think the current state of Xbox that people are not necessarily content with is the uncertainty of their hardware, the uncertainty around their ecosystem, the uncertainty that current Xbox fans who are still on the platform have about their libraries and whether or not they're going to carry over and stuff. And I think that's kind of where Xbox is now having trouble, where that wasn't the problem before. The problem before was the games. Now it isn't so much the games. I think we're still waiting on that 90 Metacritic. You know, we're still waiting on that game of the year contender that they haven't dished out. When we're talking about like 80s, high mid tiers, they've been delivering. And I hope they keep it up, to be honest. So yeah, let's just dive into what I was waiting for, what I was looking forward to in the showcase. And that was Fable. I will preface this by saying I've never played a Fable game. I had the first Xbox, but Fable, a lot of my childhood video game experience was very much reliant on my older brother and what games he was willing to buy, because he was the one who bought the Xbox, he bought the PS2, he bought the PS3 and the 360, and so on and so forth. So like, most of the games that we had for the consoles were from my brother, and I was more focused on getting my parents to buy me Game Boy games and the new Game Boy Advance and stuff. Like, my parents were portable gaming, and I relied on my brother for console gaming. And so my brother just didn't buy Fable. And I never just naturally got drawn to Fable. And so I just want to say that before I get into this, because as much as I am looking forward to this, and this is a reboot, it's not necessarily a remake of the original game. I think they're just rebooting the entire franchise. I don't have familiarity with the mechanics and the certain things that people are looking for in this game that make Fable, Fable. But I will say, what I saw has me pretty freaking excited. And I was having a side conversation with someone who is a Fable person, and they're ecstatic for this game. So Fable is being made by Playground Studios, which is the same studio that makes Forza and has always made Forza. So cool, you got a racing game studio making an RPG, and not just any RPG, but like one of the most beloved RPGs of all time. And there's some speculation around there what this is going to look like. And this is, I think, part of what I like about the developer directs, is you get to learn a little bit that you otherwise wouldn't learn just from watching a trailer. The trailer is just like, hey, this game is this. But, you know, they talked about this game is being developed by a team out of England. And they said that this team was built from scratch, from the ground up. And so I think that gives me a little confidence when I think about, oh, okay, so it's not necessarily the racing team, the Forza Horizon team, that is even making this game. Like, Playground went out of their way to go build a team specifically for this game. And from the developer direct, it seems like, especially the devs that were talking in the videos, they are fans of this franchise. They understand what makes Fable Fable. They understand what makes this game tick. And so, great. Built from the ground up team based out of England. The game has that natural focus of Fable with choice and consequence and seemingly filled with that humor. But this is where, like, they really got me. They really got me. You know, cool. It's always, all the trailers we've seen has a female protagonist, but they've confirmed that you'll be able to edit the protagonist. It's not just like a main character that they developed and you just kind of got to live with. It's still this RPG. You can build your character. It could be male, female, whatever, everything in between. And I think where they really got me is this is an RPG, man. This is an RPG of like choice and consequence. And I got to go back and play the original Fable because I want to see how deeply intertwined this choice and consequence is in the manner that people talk about it. Like people are like, yeah, you can kill everybody. Like not the like you can kill these like main characters that like are main NPCs that you talk to. Like it's like, nah, you can kill like 90% of the characters in this game. And there's consequence to that. Right? I don't think I've ever played a game like that. They were talking about how there are more than 1,000 people of Albion. Albion, I think is the name of the area. They're each unique, living their own lives. And apparently you would be able to follow any one of them throughout the entire course of like an in-game day and watch them live their life. And it makes me think of like things like Cyberpunk and some of the promises that Cyberpunk was making early on and the kind of RPG that it was trying to make and like become. Is this going to lean into that? I also hear 1,000 unique people. And I immediately think of Starfield and 1,000 worlds. I am not one of those people that necessarily has a problem with the Starfield 1,000 world thing. And the exploration, I think some of that is a little overblown. And it's all based on expectations of what they thought it was going to be. Not necessarily that it's bad. But I hear 1,000 people, I'm like, yo. 1,000 unique characters that all have voice acting and all have choice and consequence built into them. You know, the fact that you can marry people and you can have children, but you can also marry multiple people and you can have children with those multiple people. You can eventually get divorced. You can, I'm assuming, maybe just like the old Fable. Can you kill the majority, if not all of these 1,000 people? Is that a choice? And what consequences does that come with? Oh, man. Like, I'm currently playing Knights of the Old Republic, which is a game that is very, very much a choice and consequence game. You know, like, the choice and consequence that puts you down the light path of a Jedi or the dark path of a Jedi. And even within that, of maybe making a certain choice with somebody closes out other options with them and other people. I recently finished a quest that I didn't realize what I was doing. And I finished this conversation with a guy and the conversation was about helping them begin a great migration with their village. And I didn't realize what I was doing, but after that conversation, the whole village left. They were gone. And I was kind of upset about it because I hadn't hit the vendor yet. The vendor was gone too. That was it. The vendor, no mas. I needed to go buy that thing from him before I had that conversation. And so to be playing a game like that right now and trying to imagine how a game like Fable, which can seemingly be darker, according to other people, apparently is seemingly a little deeper than something like KOTOR. On the surface, it seems like that. We got to wait for the game to come out. And I think that's another thing in this that it looks good, but is it going to play good? Is it going to feel good? You know, the plane looks really nice. It's up in the sky right now. It's flying. You know, they got a real nice decal on the side, but are they going to land that plane? And that's yet to be seen, right? And so that's why I don't want to say, oh, it's as deep as a KOTOR, because a KOTOR is like some people's greatest game of all time. And I don't think that a game that hasn't come out deserves to be compared to it. But it's cool to be playing something that is choice and consequence driven, and at the same time trying to imagine what this game is going to eventually feel like and be like. You know, like you can buy businesses, you can buy homes, you can apparently evict people from those homes. And then if you go and talk to that person afterwards, that person is going to know that you fucking evict them and they're not going to like you, you know, and the choices that you make around the entire town, you'll feel the impact from the people that are living in the game. They're going to curse at you if you're a piece of shit. They're going to congratulate you if you're awesome. I can't say that I played a game like that. Again, this is probably why I want to go back and play the original Fables, because I want to see how much of that is already there and how much they're building up and creating a new one. And obviously, I know there's a 2 and a 3. I'm not sure I'll have enough time to play all of those before this Fable comes out. I'll definitely have enough time to play the first one. I looked it up, and they say it's 12 to 15 hours to do the main story. We'll see about that. I'm an RPG guy, and I have to check every fucking corner for items. Final Fantasy done did a number on me. I can't see a corner on the map that hasn't been searched and not search it. I gots to. You know, they were also talking about getting to a certain part of the map and how there's these two factions almost that you have to decide who you're going to help, who are you not going to help. And like, what are the choice and consequences that stem from that? It just seems like this game is littered with options for you to choose from that are going to have massive implications on your experience in the game. And it just sounds so, so good. I'm really, really excited for this. It's not my most anticipated game of the year. I think that's still reserved for the Returnal sequel that is escaping me right now. Is this Solos? I forget the name of the game. But that is my most anticipated game of the year. How's it the most anticipated game of the year? I can't remember the name. It's because I don't like watching trailers for things that I know I'm going to buy. I want to experience it when I buy it, and that is what that is. But yeah, so is this game going to have factions? And a system like that, maybe not as deep as Bethesda games with factions like Skyrim and Fallout, but is there going to be some layer of that there in the game? The combat, a lot of people said that the combat looked a little clunky to them. I thought the combat looked perfectly fine. And I wonder if when people are saying that the combat looks clunky, what they're saying is that the combat doesn't look like a Souls-like game. Because combat in a game can be slow and not be clunky. Like sometimes that speed of the combat is purposeful. But aside from what I'm assuming people are referencing is like these scenes where like, you know, you got a character had like a big hammer and it just looked like he was swinging it slow. And I'm imagining people are having reservations about how that could feel in real time. But when they were showing parts of the gameplay where Homie had like dual wielding swords or like a single sword and then brought the arrow out, hit him with the arrow and then hit him with some magic, like in sequential order, back to back to back. That shit looked good. That looked good. That looked to me like there's some depth in the combat system. And I think what we also got to realize when it comes to like seeing combat like that in these kinds of games is that is like act one combat, right? Like they likely did not show us anything that's past the first third of the game. And so what are the weapons will you find? What are the skills will you learn? How deep can that combat actually get? And I think that's one of the things, you know, we'll be waiting to see when the game comes out and feel that out. And I think outside of all of that, much like Playground's other game and Forza Horizon 5 and all the Forza Horizons. Excuse me. This game is gorgeous. This game looks good. This game looks really, really good. And I'm not a graphics whore. I actually think graphics is our chase for high fidelity is the worst thing that's ever happened to gaming. But that said, this game looks immaculate. Just chef's kiss. They're doing a number over there. And I think the last thing to share is it's coming out in autumn of 2026. Autumn, fall. Okay, that's September, October, November. I know a game that's coming out in November that they are not trying to come out next to. Grand Theft Auto 6. Of course, there's rumors floating around that it may get delayed again. I'm not sure about that. And if I was Xbox, I would not bet my money on that. And so for me, an autumn release that makes sense so that you're staying far enough away from a Grand Theft Auto so your game can breathe is you got to release this game in September. Like late September at the latest. At the absolute latest, this game has to come out in late December. And September, sorry. Because anything within a month of Grand Theft Auto and you're getting into the realm of people who just aren't going to buy it because they'd rather wait one more month and spend that fund that they have for gaming on Grand Theft Auto. You'll have people who are just like, oh man, maybe I should wait for a sale because I'm going to really want to get dive into it. And then Grand Theft Auto is going to come out and I'm not really going to get to do that. So maybe I should just wait and buy the game on sale. And I just think that they would be doing a massive disservice to them waiting to get that close to a Grand Theft Auto release if it isn't going anywhere. And that's also really, really important because this game is coming out day one on PlayStation. And I'm trying to think to myself, but is this the first day one Xbox release on PlayStation from like a first party studio? I'm trying to think. And I'm not counting like Gears of War. That's a remake. That's a port. Like, we're not talking about that. We're not talking about any ports. We're not talking about remakes of old games because I don't think that that counts. I'm talking about new first-party studio tentpole title too. Like Fable is one of Xbox's biggest franchises. Even though they haven't made a game in a long time, it is one of their more beloved franchises that's under that umbrella. That's coming out day one on PlayStation. And you gotta get away from Grand Theft Auto on that. Because something I have an idea of making a short video of is that the casuals are on PlayStation. The casuals are on PlayStation. If you go and look at that top 10 games sold for the year on PlayStation, it is Call of Duty, Battlefield, EA Football Club, Madden, MLB The Show, Minecraft, Fortnite. Fortnite's on sale. Minecraft, Ghost of Tsushima, like down to like 8. And then like another live service game. That is what the majority of US sales on PlayStation are. Like Ghost of Tsushima was number 8. 8. It sold like 3 million copies at least. And it's number 8. And all those other games are above it. And so you know the casuals are going to go and buy Grand Theft Auto. Like that's, people are going to go out and buy a PlayStation for Grand Theft Auto. And I do not think that you can release this game within 30 days, 45 days of Grand Theft Auto's release, which I think is currently like November 14th or something like that, somewhere around there. Don't do it, Xbox. You're going to regret it. All right. That's all I got to say about Fable. I'm really looking forward to it. The next episode is my backlog episode, and it's so funny because Fable is not on that list, but I think I'm going to have to add it to the list because such is life, man. This is why I can't finish my backlog, because something always happens, whether it's a new game that comes out or a new game that gets announced, and I'm like, damn, I got to play the old game or like the first game or the second game, whatever the hell it is, and then I the backlog gets backlogged again. You know what I mean? So, cool. Really looking forward to Fable, man. Shout out to Fable. It looks really, really, really good. And awesome that it's coming out on PlayStation. I'm not going to hold you. I don't know. We'll see if I buy it on PlayStation. I might buy it on Steam. We'll see. We'll see as we get closer to the release date, which looks to be the better platform to buy it on. Let's move on to Forza Horizon 6. I don't have too much to say about this one, to be honest. It looks good. It looked like more Forza Horizon. I'm really, really happy that they're going to Japan. But I think from what I saw in the trailer or what I didn't see in the trailer that kind of has me a little disappointed is I didn't get a vibe for the nightlife. I didn't get a vibe for the nighttime racing in Japan. And I'm talking, you know, there's a game I love from the PS2 generation. It's called, oh my God, no, there's no way I could forget this game. Get the hell out of here. Absolutely not. I'm not going to let this happen to me. It's Tokyo Drift. Yes, Tokyo Extreme Racer. Sorry. Tokyo Extreme Racer, and I had like the Drift version. I had a few versions of this game. But Tokyo Extreme Racer was a game on the PS2 that was, I mean, bare bones. All you did was race and work on your car. There was no story. There was no, like, none of this gimmicky stuff, cops chasing me. Like, nah. You bought your car. You worked on your car. You went out into the nighttime streets of Tokyo and you raced. You went and you got behind a car. There was like a streetcar, flashed your lights, race start. I mean, like, in and out, just getting this fucking racing in. But it has such a vibe. It has such a feel for that midnight racing, that nighttime street racing of Japan, Tokyo. And I'm looking at a list because they actually not re-released the game, but they've made a new version of the game as of last year. And I'm waiting on a sale for that one because I'm not in a rush to play it, even though it's my favorite racer of all time. I'm not in a rush to buy it. It's $50. I'm waiting for that to be like $30 and I'm going to buy it. And I'm kind of disappointed that I didn't see that in today's showcase for Horizon. I really wanted to see some of that. I think that there's some hope that there will be that because they did show us different areas in Japan. Like we did see some inner city racing, just wasn't at night. We did see some mountain racing, some open area racing, and so on and so forth. But I think what a lot of people are hoping for with that Japan game is that there's going to be this night culture, this street racing culture. The thing that has me most hopeful about that is that they announced that they're going to do meetups in the game, that they're adding a feature where people can host meetups. And from there, there's events that can extend outward from that activity. And I'm imagining that that's maybe people doing the meetup and then racing from there. I'm wondering how that's going to feel like. Is that going to feel like a NBA 2K, like hub, like neighborhood where there's going to be a bunch of cars in the parking lot and it's going to be like, all right, like who's racing next? Like line up the racers over there and stuff. Don't get me wrong. That could be cool. And I think that would feel really refreshing, especially for somebody like myself who I don't think Horizon 5 does that. Forza Horizon 5 does that. So if I remember correctly, when I was watching the video, it made it sound like it was something new. So I'm looking forward to see what events are going to be extensions of the car meetups, because I think that's really cool. There's going to be over 550 cars to start at launch, which is their most cars ever. And much like I said about Fable, this game was gorgeous. It's gorgeous. Holy shit. Racing games are one of the few games I'm willing to be a graphics snob on, because I don't think that we're foregoing too much in mechanics and processing to make racing games look good. And I think those are the kind of games that really benefit from realistic graphics. But that game looked good. The streets of Tokyo, the open fields with cherry blossoms. Oh. Yeah, they doing one over there with that one. And this one, unlike Fable, is not coming out day and date. It's not coming out day and date on PlayStation. They said coming out May 19th on Xbox, and then it will be released on PlayStation later this year. They didn't provide a date. They didn't provide a window. And I can't imagine it's because they're trying to see what else comes out where. It probably is because they don't know when they're actually going to be done working on the PlayStation version of that game. It did feel like a quick turnaround for Forza Horizon. And so I'm imagining they just haven't had the time. And they're not going to wait for the PlayStation release for this game. They probably just don't see it as something that's worthwhile. Supposedly this game sold 5 million copies on PlayStation. But if I'm not mistaken, that came from like this company called Alinea Analytics. And I'll be honest with you, and this is no disrespect to anybody over there, I don't trust any of their statistics. I have no idea how they're getting their numbers. And they had this one hiccup with, I think it was Final Fantasy VII Remake on the Xbox. No, not on the Xbox. I forget what game. Oh, Final Fantasy 16 came out on the Xbox. And they were like, yeah, this game only sold 11,000 copies or something like that. And that the data they were using was like reviews of the game? The fuck? That is how you're coming to a conclusion of data? Reviews? Optional reviews? Nah. Nah. Until the day I see a detailed explanation of how they arrive at the conclusions that they arrive to for their analytics, I will never trust anything they say. That's no disrespect to them. It just is what it is. And last but not least about Forza, this game is also going to have track building like they've had in previous Forza games. But this one's going to be multiplayer. And so you'll be able to build tracks with multiple people. They didn't say how many people. But I got to imagine it can't be more than like four. So do you really want more than four people working on a track? I don't know. Maybe. Got to imagine it takes a long time to work on a track. But they didn't say a total number of people that would be able to do that at one time. I think just to play it safe, I would imagine there's somewhere between two and four. So keep an ear out for that if that's something that you're into. So yeah, that's Forza Horizon 6. Really looking forward to this one too. I've been waiting for a good racing game. I think that good racing game for me is Tokyo Extreme Racer, the new one. I'm not gonna hold you, but I'm down to see what Forza Horizon 6 has to offer for this installment. Because 5 was cool, 5 was fun, but I fell off of 5 not long after. And if that's what's gonna happen with 6, then what are we even doing? The next game, probably the game I'm actually interested in the most, you know, like Fable, I'm interested in Fable, but there's so much, I don't know, I feel like if I say Fable is the game I'm looking forward to the most, it's because Fable is the one that is leaning on a history of that franchise already. Like there's been 3 games already, they're beloved, and to have another game coming out as a reboot of this franchise is a big deal, right? And so like for that reason, that game is really highly anticipated for me. But Game Freak has a new game, Beast of Reincarnation, that is like, if this is my alley, baby, I'm right here. This game is right around my alley. Ooh. Also, I don't know if anybody noticed, if you watched, they must have mentioned Pokemon like 10 times. They're like, oh, you know, when we were working on Pokemon, we always thought about this and it feels good to move away from Pokemon. Like they mentioned Pokemon, I kid you not, like 10 times. I want to go back and count it. But I was actually kind of surprised about that because even though they are like arbiters of the brand, right? Like they own that in a way, in that they make the main games for Pokemon. It's just weird to see this franchise being mentioned in an Xbox developer direct, you know, that just has nothing to do with Pokemon or Nintendo at all. And that was really interesting. And I wonder how Nintendo feels about that. Keep it a buck. And I think that's part of why I'm even mentioning that too. I got in my notes. They seemed so excited. The devs seemed so excited to be working on something that wasn't Pokemon. Like that's kind of the sentiment I got of them bringing it up. Like they weren't bringing it up like they missed it. They were bringing it up like, oh man, you know, we were doing these things in Pokemon and we're so happy that we get to now do these things here. And it's not to say I don't think that they never want to make Pokemon games again. Please, those games make way too much money to ever lean into that. But man, I, I, it, it makes you wonder, like, people talk about it with, like, the Call of Duty studios. Like, they're always churning out a Call of Duty game. And, you know, the studios never get to really work on anything else. And they're all support studios and so on. And that can get monotonous and tiring and uninspiring. And this game, I feel like it's oozing inspiration. It is oozing passion. And they were talking in Japanese. And so there were subtitles, but again, you could see it in their face. You could see it in their mannerisms and the gestures. They are excited about this game. They are excited to have a game coming out under their umbrella that is not Pokemon. And I fucks with that. OD, I really, really do. Because especially for artists, you want artists to work on what they want to work on. There's nothing worse than boxing an artist in and forcing them to do something that they don't want to do, you know, because that is not how you're going to get the best art. That's for sure. So cool. This is a post-apocalyptic Japan. It takes place in 4026, which is 2000. That's 2000 years from now. Actually, now I'm thinking about it, 2 millennia from now. And it follows a female protagonist and her companion wolf, and it's their journey. I forget what the premise of the story is, of like their town being, it's like this post-apocalyptic world. Plants have kind of like taken over in a way. And that's kind of like the essence of the game. Like the themes are surrounding like floral and just all, I'm looking for the word and it is escaping me. Not floral to describe groups of flowers. Oh boy. Anyways, you can see it in the environmental design of the game where everything is covered in foliage. Maybe that's the word I was looking for. Everything is covered in foliage. Everything is covered in grass that if you looked at it, you're like, oh wow, this hasn't been touched in decades, but really it hasn't been touched in millennia. And the world has been affected by this blight, which is what is causing the flowers and the foliage to be this detrimental factor in the world that makes the world dangerous. It was hard to keep up with the themes of the game, because again, they weren't talking in English and I was watching this while I was at work and I was trying to take notes at the same time, take notes while reading subtitles, not necessarily working out. But I will say, I personally appreciated that because again, when I see a game I like, it looks like it's something I want to play, I don't really want to know too much about it because I'd rather go into it blind and experience it blind. But what really drew me into the game is that the combat early on in the trailers, in the videos they were showing, it looked very Souls-like. You know, you got big bosses that seem like they are pattern-driven, you know, watching out for these patterns, making sure that you're dodging. It looked like the game had a parry mechanic. But then, as the videos go on and they start introducing the companion wolf and talking about how the companion wolf falls into the gameplay, or meshes into the gameplay, is when they start showing the skill tree. The skill tree looked pretty expansive. It looked bigger than just like, you know, like sometimes you open the skill tree and it's just, boop, you know, it's in the one frame of your TV and there's no scrolling or anything. This looked like a skill tree that you had to scroll through. There's a lot of skills and it seems like there could be a lot of branching paths that you could take to have a unique gameplay experience. Based on maybe some skill choices you made here and skill choices you made there. And that's where they showed some of the skills you could use in conjunction with your companion. And that's where I saw that, yeah, the combat's Souls-like, but it definitely has more action-based elements when you think about having these skills, how you use these skills. There's quick time actions in the skills with your companion and stuff like that. And so there's this very active nature to the combat where it's not just like a Souls-like where you're looking for your window to attack and you're trying to dodge attacks and patterns that are coming at you. It seems like it's much of that, but also much of this maybe not Devil May Cry sort of action-y combat, but skills with cooldowns sort of, and menus popping up that, again, with QTEs and timing that add a level of engagement for that game that when I saw that, I was like, oh, okay, like this really might be something that I fucks with. And so in addition to the blight with the flowers, you have these sort of robots around the world too, which the embodiment of the robot is when humans died, they transferred themselves into robots, which, Jesus Christ, that's post-apocalyptic shit. And that's another layer of enemies in the game. And let's see. Yeah, I wrote right here. Another enemy is the golems, who are people that transfer their being into mechanical robots. And again, that I feel like added a layer to the depth of enemy variety and the different styles of combat that you're going to have to get into to be able to beat a game like this. And that's awesome. And another game that looked beautiful. I mean, beautiful. Why can't Pokemon games not look like this? I don't really want a Pokemon game to look like this, but like, bro, y'all make games like this? And y'all got fucking Pokemon? I'm sorry for the camera shaking. I keep fucking slamming my hand on the desk. But goodness gracious, this game is beautiful. And it's just Pokemon? These are the people who make Pokemon? Who the fuck? That's pretty much all I gotta say about this game, man. The world looks devastatingly beautiful in the way that it's been taken over by foliage. That's the way I described it in my notes. And that really is just what it looks. It was a really, really good showcase of that game. And again, to see the studio that is predominantly known and only pretty much known for Pokemon, to see them be excited to make this game, I think that's what's got me so excited for it too. You got a bunch of passionate developers who've got a chance to make something that they've been dying to make. I don't know about you, but when stuff like that happens, we tend to get really good shit. Again, making an artist do something that they don't want to do is a recipe for disaster, but letting an artist do what they want to do, giving them the freedom to really express themselves and see something through, the return on that is going to be beautiful. This one is going to release this summer on Xbox, PC, and PlayStation. Again, that's a game-free game, and it wasn't Xbox first-party studio, so I'm not surprised that it's coming to PlayStation. I will say, none of these games are coming out for the Switch, too. I feel like a Forza Horizon could come out on the Switch, too. You know? Know about a Fable? I can see how a Fable just can't work on a Switch 2, especially if there's so much going on where you got 1,000 characters who are unique and have choice and consequence built into all of them. There's just a level of processing power there that I imagine maybe the Switch 2 can't handle. Maybe it just needs more optimization, and we'll find it down the line. I'm just surprised. I'm honestly just to briefly get a little deeper into that, I'm just so surprised that we haven't seen any Xbox first-party studio games on the Switch 2, and we're now 7 months into the life cycle of the Switch 2. I really thought that by now we'd maybe see a game or two having made its way over there, but we haven't. And so, yeah, that's super interesting. Super, super interesting. And, yeah, that's all I gotta say about Beast of the Reincarnation. If you haven't watched a trailer on that, go watch a trailer on that. That's a beauty. And last but certainly not least, the mystery game, which was from Double Fine, or I say mystery game, the surprise game. There's always rumors of there being a surprise game, so I feel like it's never a surprise that there's a surprise game. It's just a surprise what the game actually is. So this year, it was Double Fine, the developers of Psychonauts, and, oh my god, what was the game that came out last year? They made a game last year that I forgot to play. Keeper, which was kind of like a slow-paced, I don't want to call it a walking sim, but more of like an environmental experience sort of game. And I'm actually kind of a fan of Double Fine. Not necessarily that like I love their games, but I love a studio that's willing to do weird shit. And this game that they made is some weird shit. Game called Kiln, again, K-I-L-N. And it's a game, it's a multiplayer game where you create your own clay pots to fight in a multiplayer environment. This, I don't want to say it's hero shooter, but it's like team-based, team versus team. And based on how you built your pot or the pot that you chose to fight with, your pot has special abilities. And there's like special goals for each of the multiplayers, each of the multiplayer types. And I gotta say, I wish I could say that I spent more time paying attention to this trailer, because I knew that this wasn't necessarily a game for me. I was like, okay, this is like the weaker game of the four that are being announced. But while I was watching the trailer, the thought I was having about this was, this is a passion project. If I'm not mistaken, in the video they talked about how it was a passion project. Like they, you know, in between making their last big game and their next big game, they're always trying to see if they can fit something in and try something new and try something weird, think outside the box. And I was thinking to myself, I wrote right here in my notes. I just want to read it from my notes. This left me a bit confused about Xbox's approach to the games they want their studios to make. And an annex to that. Does Double Fine just have the reputation that allows them to make passion projects like this? You know, like, they're a studio who is known for this. And they've made great games. Psychonauts 1 and 2 are both successful and beloved games. And although a lot of their games are weird and quirky, that's what they're known for. And Tim Schafer is like a beloved game director. And I'm wondering if maybe he just has that kind of pull where Xbox is like, yeah, you know what? Y'all can go make some weird shit that we're not going to make money off of. Y'all, go do your thing, man. Go have fun. And the next thing I said is, not sure who the audience for this is and whether Xbox thinks it'll sell well, but it begs the question why they'd cancel other projects while keeping projects like this one that may not generate a lot of profit. And, you know, last year Microsoft laid off thousands of people. Who knows how many of them were from the game division. But we did hear about studio closures. We heard about projects being canceled. Perfect Dark got canceled, which was a huge franchise and a game that a lot of people were looking forward to. That game got canceled. But a video game about making clay pots that fight in multiplayer arenas, that is greenlit and is coming out. And it's seemingly not really getting drawn to by a lot of people. And so is this game going to turn a profit? And if it doesn't turn a profit, what does that mean? Like, is Xbox okay with that? And why is Xbox okay with that if they are? You know, because when you think about like Hi-Fi Rush and how they got rid of Hi-Fi Rush and Tango Studios, which that game was beloved. That people were saying that was the game of this generation. That was the best game that had come out of Xbox in this generation up until that point. And they got rid of that studio and parted ways with that studio. They parted ways with Toys by Bob Swap. Oh my god, the studio escaping me. I think it's Toys by Bob or Bob's Toys. I forget. But like they parted ways with that studio, and like now they have like a partnership where they're working with them, but it's not a studio under their umbrella. And so it's like, on one hand, it feels like you're not really into doing the smaller game thing, the passion project thing, the weird game thing. But then Double Fine comes out of left field. They're your surprise game in the developer direct. And this is like one of the weirdest games I've seen in quite some time. This is the most passion project I've seen in a minute. And it just, it left me with that question of like, all right, like, what makes sense at Xbox then? What doesn't make sense? And is it people-based? Like, again, is Tim Schafer just that beloved that they're like, you know what, man, we're going to let this guy make this game, because we don't let this, like, let him make this game, he's going to leave. Who knows? I mean, we may never find out. But I think I walked away from this thinking, this is really cool. I can see myself playing this with some friends, like 1, 2, maybe 3 days, depending on how fun it is, just to try it out. Because I do think the good thing, the great things that come from games like this, is that they build mechanics, new mechanics, weird mechanics, unique mechanics, that in that game are required and awesome, but not like stand out in the sense that so many people are going to gravitate to it and love it for that. But what if that unique feature that was built for that game gets put in another game that is a tentpole franchise or becomes a tentpole franchise? And I think that's why passion projects like this are so important. Everything can't always be something that has already existed. We need people trying out new things. We need people trying out new ideas. You know, I just got into a conversation with a cousin of mine earlier about how, you know, we're in late stage capitalism and that, you know, big businesses don't want to take risks. Big companies don't want to take risks. Like, if it's make a new original IP or make another Marvel movie, we make it another Marvel movie. If it's come up with a new Disney IP or make Toy Story 5, motherfucker, we gonna make Toy Story 5. We're not taking any risks. And this game feels like a risk, right? Not in a risk that is going to be detrimental to the company, because it doesn't look like a game that's costing tens and hundreds of millions of dollars to make. But it's a risk in that the time and the energy that was used to make this game could have gone to something else. It's a risk in that it might not turn a profit. But I think things that don't turn profit are necessary sometimes, because if we're just making things in the pursuit of profit, we're never going to really make anything meaningful ever again. Like, that, I hate to get fucking hyperbolic in that way, but again, the creation of things simply for the pursuit of money is a soulless path to go down, in my personal opinion. And if there's anything to pull from this game getting greenlit and seeing the light of day coming out in spring of 2026, is that we might get some really cool shit from this. We really, really might. And I'm interested to see what other people think about it. I'm interested to see what I'm going to think about it. It's gonna be interesting. Double Fine. Interesting. But that is the closeout of the Xbox Developer Direct. Fable, Forza Horizon 5, Beast of Reincarnation, and Kill. I really, really, really enjoyed today's Developer Direct. If I had to give it a grade, probably an 8.5 out of 10. I really liked the Fable Showcase. Forza Horizon, it didn't disappoint me, but it was just more Horizon. Again, I didn't see anything that I wanted to see. I didn't see anything that excited me about nightlife racing in Tokyo, which is what I want to see. Which is what I wanted to see. Beast of Reincarnation. This was the surprise for me from the show, because once I saw they were on the docket, Game Freak was on the docket, I was like, oh okay, say no more. Also, I gotta look up if, because Game Freak already announced a game that had people like, yo, this is a Game Freak game, and I don't think it's this game, if I'm not mistaken. I gotta go look back at that, because I don't think it's this game. I think Beast of Reincarnation might have. Did it just get announced? I gotta look that up. But really awesome to see Game Freak working on something new. I'm loving the passion that's coming out of that dev team, seemingly from the videos, because that's gonna lead to a great product getting made. And then Kill, quirky, weird, but could lead to something really special. Just to reference something, and it's not the same because it's an already established franchise. But when Ratchet and Clank came out on the PS5, and they did the dual character thing where Ratchet and Rivet. I think her name was Rivet. Were like, oh, you could play as one or the other, and they like each had their own special abilities and like things like that they could do in levels. I knew that was Insomniac testing out that mechanic for Spider-Man 2. And then Spider-Man 2 comes out, and oh wow, you can play as Miles and Peter. And I'm wondering if Double Fine is making these weird games, like a Keeper, like a Kiln, and that some of these mechanics are going to bleed into their next great game. And again, that's the kind of shit that comes out of passion work. And so looking forward to that. The show was awesome. And what that's got me thinking of, or like where my mind is at, leading to the last thing I want to talk about, which is just like where Xbox stands going into 2026 now. You know, we're 3 weeks into the year. We got the whole rest of the year to go. And what their current 2026 lineup is looking like is Kill, which is coming out in the spring. And just for these games, Kill coming out in the spring. Forza coming out May 19th and on PlayStation later in the year. Beast of Reincarnation in the summer. Fable in the autumn. You know, and then you also got like rumors of Gears of War E-Day coming out this year. And there's games from last year's showcase that I didn't have time to look up and put in my notes. But there's a slew of games from last year's showcase that are day and date in Game Pass that are slated to come out this year. Are those also going to come out this year? And I'm not going to lie, $30 a year is a whole lot of money, and I'm just not sure who is getting enough value in video game playtime to warrant paying $30 a month. But boy, oh boy, you're going to be eating this year on Xbox. You were eating last year on Xbox between Oblivion, Expedition 33, the new Doom game, Ninja Gaiden, everything that came out in between. They added Star Wars Outlaws in there. It was eating in 2025. That's why, like, I saw some people making fun of some content creators who were like, oh, is this going to be Xbox's year? And people were like, oh, they keep saying this. But like, how was Xbox? That was last year, not Xbox's year. If I'm not mistaken, 2024, they were publisher of the year in 2024, if I'm not mistaken. And they were seeing, slowly but surely, because again, it was always going to take time, we were slowly seeing the outcome of them buying Activision Blizzard, of them buying Bethesda. You know, like, there's rumors of Fallout remakes coming out this year, both Fallout 3 and Fallout New Vegas. And does that come out early in the year? I mean, like, you eating insanity. And again, if you don't want to subscribe to Game Pass, just go buy the fucking games. But yo, they're putting out games. The games is not Xbox's problem anymore. But it does lead me to what their problem is, and that is the state of their hardware, the state of the brand. The state of their ecosystem, which, as far as ecosystems go, I have felt like they've always had the best ecosystem of the three between Xbox, PlayStation, and Nintendo. PlayStation is catching up, especially with the Portal, specifically because of the Portal, and that they've extended cloud to the Portal, having another device that you can play your games on, even though it's an extension of your PS5 still. Them developing that ecosystem is awesome. But like the state of the hardware with Xbox, you know, console sales are so low. I mean, every quarter last year, it was like Xbox sales year over year, down 40%, which is a lot. Down 50%, which is a lot. And that was just the theme of last year. And all last year, I wonder if the numbers are going to be like that the following year, right? Like, because the numbers were so low last year that we could see an increase in percentage of console sales year over year just because it had gotten to such a low point. But what if it doesn't? What if we see another 40% dip this year? You know, and like, what does that say about the state of their hardware? And again, the concern that people have about how committed they're going to be to hardware moving forward, right? They've already said that they're making another console. But people are skeptical, not just of whether or not it'll actually happen, but whether or not it'll be a console, or will it be a PC? Will it play my Xbox games? Because you said this Xbox ROG Ally was an Xbox. but I can't play my Xbox library natively on it. And so it's not an Xbox. And this gray area that they have not given us a true answer for, right? Xbox Play Anywhere, which is awesome. There's like over 1,000 games on that. But again, this is where PlayStation comes in, and they're developing their ecosystem and making it better. And on their cloud, which is accessed through the portal, they got like 2,000 plus games available through the cloud on PlayStation that you can play between consoles and stuff like that, saves carrying over and whatnot. Again, it's not as expansive as Xbox Play Anywhere, because that PlayStation is exclusive to their first-party products, but they're expanding, right? And they got more games. Maybe that's why they're able to put more games on their list than Xbox. Who knows? Because if PlayStation maybe expanded to PC, then it wouldn't be 2,000, right? It'd be significantly less than that. So, like, what are the developments of Xbox Play Anywhere going to be? And are we just going to see more consistency there with that? And are we going to see a big commitment to backwards compatibility that reassures an audience of people who are uncertain about where Xbox stands, that they will have that in their next console purchase, and that they don't have to worry about having to jump ship to go to PlayStation or to go to Nintendo, to feel reassured that their money is being spent somewhere that is still going to be here in 5 years, 10 years. And all that said about low console sales, the reality of that is that they still have 30 million consoles out there in the wild, as far as Series X's and S's go. And 30 million is a lot of people. You know, something I've never really liked that people do online is they've always tried to reference, like, oh yeah, you're gonna trust Microsoft, the people who got rid of the Zune, the people who got rid of the Windows Phone, like, you're really gonna trust those people on, like, maintaining Xbox hardware? Like, those, you know, they try stuff and get rid of it faster than anybody. But, like, the Zune sold like 2 million units, like, all time. That shit didn't sell anything. It's like 2 to 3 million units. That is a tenth. That is a tenth of the current generation of Xboxes out in the wild. You know, the Windows Phone, they got rid of the Windows Phone because they lost that battle early. I remember, because I'm an iPhone guy, and I was so upset that they left the phone game, because they were the one company I felt that could challenge Apple in a meaningful way, because they were the ones making the phone. They owned the App Store. They owned the software. Like, they had it to compete with Apple. But you know where they fucked up? Their App Store. They came so late into the game with establishing their App Store that by the time they did, it just did not matter anymore. I remember, because I worked at T-Mobile, so I used to use the phone all the time, and I knew all the ins and outs and stuff. And I was just like, yo, this shit has potential, but they gotta pick up the slack. And they just never picked up the slack on the App Store, and Apple ran away with it. They never turned back. And Microsoft just got out of the game because they knew that it was a game that they were not going to win anymore, especially once Google established their Play Store and all the slew of phones that were using that. And that was it. They could have accepted being third place, and it would have been a far third place, kind of how it is right now in game consoles. And I imagine they just didn't feel like that was worth it. And so I don't like that people use those as references for this, because 30 million people is a lot of people. And 30 million people in any product or service is not a group of people that you just leave behind. Which is why as much as I'm having questions of what are their plans for the next console, I just cannot imagine a world where Microsoft, Xbox, whatever, is going to make a decision that, hey, guys, those hundreds of games that you own, dozens, hundreds, potentially over 1,000 games that you own on your console, sorry, you're not going to be able to bring that over. The tens of thousands of dollars you have spent on that software, gone in the wind. And I'm sorry, we're just not going to be able to do anything about it. We tried, but we just couldn't do it. I just cannot imagine a world where that happens, because that's not just a world where, like, Xbox as a brand is done, cooked, smoked, just get rid of it, don't even do anything ever again, because it's over at that point if you do that. But I think that that would be a massive blow to Microsoft as the mother company of Xbox, as the parent company of Xbox. That would be such a detrimental blow to that entire company. I don't think that that is a viable choice for them to make. Is it? Can it happen? Certainly. 100%. I cannot see it happening. I cannot. That is just such a bad decision to make. Maybe that's why I kind of don't have any concerns about the next console, because I'm just like, that would be that would be absolutely not. I just can't imagine anybody doing something that stupid. I can't. So we'll see. We'll see what happens with that. But yeah. And then when it comes to like the new hardware, is it going to be portable? You know, are we going to get an Xbox portable device? You know, there's rumors of PlayStation making their portable device. Nintendo already has a portable device, and you have all these PC handhelds on the market. Is Xbox going to try to enter that space and make a product that's portable that gives, that offers another value proposition for somebody to go and buy it? Is it going to be less than $1,000? And I don't even think that's an Xbox problem. I think that's an everybody problem, because graphics cards, expensive. The RAM situation has gotten out of control, and a whole bunch of people think that that's not going to affect console gaming. You're a moron. You don't know anything about manufacturing pipelines. That is so going to affect consoles. And now there's talk in the last day or two about NVMe SSDs are going to be hit with price increases because companies are choosing not to make SSDs in exchange for making hardware for AI, which is also just going to drive the price up of SSDs, and your console is going to have SSDs in it. And so is the Xbox going to be less than $1,000? Because I can see a world where somebody's going to cough up $1,000 for a PlayStation. I can see a hardcore gamer being like, you know what, man, I'm about to pay $1,000 for that PlayStation. I mean, they're already paying $1,000 damn near for a PlayStation 5 Pro. So why not? I don't know if a casual gamer is going to do that, but then you know, they're going to tell the casual gamers the same shit that the Nintendo told the Switch people. We got a Switch for you. And that's the first Switch. Switch Lite, Switch OLED, OG Switch. We got a Switch for you. Xbox did that with the Xbox One, right? We got an Xbox for you. If you can't buy this one, we got an Xbox for you. It's that old one, you know? And so is it going to be less than $1,000? And then I think the big thing, especially because the original rumors were that it was going to come out in 2027, I'm wondering how all this RAM, SSD, manufacturing pipeline stuff is going to affect release dates, not just with the Xbox, but with the Steam Machine, the next PlayStation, and so forth, the next iteration of a Nintendo Switch. Will it get announced this year? Will we get any hint, any clue that the Xbox console is around the corner? And I'm not certain. I'm not. Because there's so much uncertainty around pricing out what a console that's going to come out next year would really look like with the state of electronics manufacturing right now. It's really, really bad. So, yeah. So, I don't know. You know, and can the brand recover? You know, is anything that they're going to do over the next few years going to change the sentiment that people currently have around Xbox? Is them releasing all of these games this year, and is Fable being a 90 plus Metacritic going to change the way people feel about Xbox? You know, Forza Horizon 5 was already a 90 plus. So does Horizon 6 being a 90 plus change anything? Probably not. You know, does Fable being a 90 plus change anything? Probably not. Because it's like, great, you made one good game in the last, you made one game of the year contender in the last decade and a half. What are we supposed to do with that? You know what I mean? Like, when's the next 90 Metacritic come in? You know, is Gears of War E-Day going to be a 90 plus Metacritic? If both of those are, does that change anything? And I'm gonna be honest with you, I just don't think it does. I don't think it does. And I think Xbox has to get into a motion of things going right for them back to back to back. Like, I mean, these games gotta be good. You got to put out no bad news. Like, I mean, like little to no bad news, and stop delivering bad news after good news. Like, I mean, like immediately after good news. Like, give yourselves a goddamn win, bro. For once. A win that you can enjoy for longer than 2 weeks. And then just outside of, like, even the brand recovering and, like, what they would have to do if they can't. Does Xbox outlive Microsoft's lofty AI dreams, you know? Like, AI, Microsoft is obviously in the pursuit of trying to be the ones who break through in AI. They want to be the ones who get it right. They want to be the ones who companies go to for the product, for the service. And that venture is costing a lot of money. A lot of money. And so is Xbox going to outlast that venture? You know, when you got companies like Samsung saying, yeah, we're not going to make SSDs anymore because there's more money in making hardware for the future of AI. Who is to say Microsoft wouldn't look at Xbox and say, yo, love video games and everything, but there's more money in doing this. And so we're just going to stop doing video games and pursue this other lane of making money. Because again, we live in America and we live in a capitalist country. And if it ain't for the pursuit of making more money, it isn't worth doing. You know, and it's, again, kind of what I was saying about the Double Fine and like a passion project, right? Like, it's so important to do things for the sake of doing that thing, not for the sake of making money. But Microsoft is in the business of doing things for the sake of making money. And if Xbox is not making more money than what they think that allotment of money can make them elsewhere, like say AI, then Microsoft will make that decision. And not because they want to, mostly because they have to. They have a fiduciary responsibility to their shareholders to make money. And not just make any money, make the most money they can. Do the best in their ability to return profit to their investors. That is their duty, their fiduciary responsibility, their legal obligation. And I'm wondering if Xbox is going to outlive that legal obligation. So yeah. That's the show today. God damn, I kept it under an hour and a half. I'm actually really proud of myself for that. You know, I thought I was going to keep it under an hour, and I was like, all right. I was like, yo, we're on Double Fine. We're almost done. And then I scrolled down, and I was like, oh, the state of Xbox. Damn it. But we're under a minute and 30, and I'm really, really happy about that. So again, thank you for listening to the pod. If you're still here, I really, really appreciate you. If you are one of the people who have been listening to the podcast for the past 30 days, when I haven't put out a single episode, I really hope you enjoyed this one. And I hope you'll come back for the next one, and the one after that, and the one after that. I really, really, really appreciate it, because what it shows me is that there's an urgency to talk about games. There's an urgency to, or a feeling or a desire to talk about games, to listen to me, I guess, talk about games. And that's exciting. That makes me really happy. And yeah, can't wait for the next episode. Again, next episode is going to be my Backlog Chronicles. I'm really actually looking forward to going through that. It's kind of going to just be a light conversation about the ideas of backlogs and kind of how that affects me and how I handle backlogs in my life. But then also going through what my top 10 games in my backlog are and the games I'm trying to tackle this year out of the backlog. I literally have some of what many people consider the greatest games of all time on my backlog. And I feel like a fraud for not having played some of these. And I really got to get them out. I really got to get those games under my belt. Roll credits on them bad boys. So yeah, I appreciate y'all. Thanks again for listening. Let me know your thoughts, man. Comment on YouTube. Leave a review on the podcast or any of the services. Hit me up on my DMs on Instagram, on TikTok. Comment on my short form videos. We can talk about games there too. The whole point of me doing this is like, I just want to have discourse. I want to have healthy discourse about this thing I fucking love, which is video games. And there just ain't enough of that happening online. So this is the space for it, of course. And with that, I hope you have a wonderful day, afternoon, evening, weekday, weekend, whenever and wherever you may be listening to this or watching it on YouTube. And on that note, deuces!